Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. MidwayUSA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Hunt of a lifetime, changing lives one adventure at a time, empowering kids with courage. Join us in creating memories for kids facing life-threatening illnesses. We are here to make dreams come true. From magical outdoor escapades to heartwarming experiences, every moment is cherished. With every step of our young heroes, find a network of support, love, families, volunteers, and friends unite to uplift spirits and spread smiles. Amidst breathtaking landscapes, kids find strength they never knew they had. Together, we conquer challenges and celebrate victories. Be a part of the movement that transforms lives. Your contribution can bring courage and hope where it's needed most. Go to huntofalifetime.org to get involved. Let's create a world of cherished moments and unstoppable bravery.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other Game Wardens on our adventures protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch. Warden's Watch is brought to you in part by Maine Operation Game Thief, New Hampshire Wildlife Heritage Foundation, White Mountains Community College Conservation Law Program, the Game Warden Museum, and Securit Gun Storage. Warden's Watch, Episode 124, Candy Klosterman, Ohio, Chief of Law Enforcement. And before we get right into Candy's history and her podcast, I just want to talk about Women's History Month, where we really celebrate women in conservation. And certainly don't want to leave out our last episode on the Thin Green Line with Karen Hunter, who is a leader in firearms training and a representative for Securit Gun Storage, which we are going to be partnering with the next year. Really looking forward to it. If you haven't listened to Karen's podcast yet, I would encourage you to that. She talks about training with your gun storage, which I will tell you there's something I have not done and something that I plan on doing in the future for sure. I think sometimes we don't think about those things. And as law enforcement officers, as military, we train. And I will tell you from personal experience, the more you train, when you get in that situation, things happen very quickly and your training kicks in.
It's almost a muscle reflex. Sometimes I've had my gun in my hand and not remembered to draw it. And it's just it's a muscle reflex, and that's what training becomes. Training becomes embedded into your system, so your body knows how to react to certain situations. And it's as easy as trying to get your handgun out of your safe in the dark at night, and maybe your biometrics doesn't work. And we talked about that in Karen's podcast. So very dynamic leader in firearms training, and we certainly want to celebrate her too. But in this episode, we get an opportunity to sit down with Candy Klosterman. And I'm going to read this because my assistant producer, Stacy DeRosha, does such an awesome job when she writes out these things and descriptions. So I got to read some of this stuff in because she does such a great job of it. So episode 124, Candy Klosterman. From humble beginnings, fishing the tranquil lakes of Ohio, to her current position as Chief of Law Enforcement for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources Wildlife Division, Candy Klosterman is no stranger to blazing trails. As the state's pioneering female wildlife investigator, she spearheaded numerous of high-profile cases, earning multiple accolades along the way, including the prestigious Guy Bradley Award for lifetime contributions to wildlife law enforcement. With a career spanning nearly three decades, her commitment to safeguarding Ohio's natural resources, mentoring the next generation of officers, and championing the inclusion of women in wildlife conservation sets the standards for excellence. We can't wait to see what she does next, and that is for sure. She's got her whiteboard, as you're going to hear about in this podcast, and she's got some goals, and she's got some exciting things for Ohio that are coming, certainly. And I just wanted the pleasure of meeting R.T. Stewart, former game warden, undercover game warden, who wrote the book, Poachers Were My Prey. I met him this year down at the National Wild Turkey Federation Conference, and he said something that struck me with Candy. He said, I'd go through a door with Candy. And in a law enforcement segment, going through the door, the first one through the door, is probably the most dangerous spot, and you need to rely on the people you're with. And that's what RT was talking about, that he would rely on Candy. And that was probably one of the biggest compliments any law enforcement officer can say about another law enforcement officer, is that they would go through a door with them. So RT Stewart certainly thinks very highly of the chief, Candy Klosterman, at this point. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy this podcast. It's just a dynamic interview with a leader of conservation, wildlife, law enforcement. Thank you. On this Warden's Watch, we are sitting down with Candy Klosterman, the Law Enforcement Executive Administrator, the Chief of Law Enforcement, the Department of Natural Resources, the Division of Wildlife, Candy. And I got that right?
Yeah.
I must have, there was a little hiccup in there. I could tell by your reactions. Basically, Candy is the colonel, the chief of law enforcement for the Ohio Wildlife Division, correct?
That is correct.
Great. And you haven't been in this position very long, have you, Candy?
No, I haven't. Since June of this year. And it was a bit of a trial run. My predecessor was still here for a couple of months, so I got to shadow him before he left. But
nice.
There wasn't a lot of time there to shadow, but at least I got to see parts of the job before coming into it.
Yeah, the basic rundown. That's nice, because a lot of places you're all by yourself day one, and you know, it's sink or swim, right?
That's absolutely what typically happens. There's really not a lot of time for successional planning. So I was fortunate to have that time with my predecessor, and now I'm on my own, flying solo. So
nice. And let's go back into your history, how you started it, and we're going to air this during March, during the Women's Month, where we appreciate women doing jobs like yours and, you know, being trailblazers, so to speak, in, you know, wildlife, I think, especially wildlife law enforcement specifically, because we had this talk off before we started recording, is that we've had Nancy Foley on, and Nancy was, you know, back way, well, I shouldn't say way back, but she was kind of one of the forerunners in our nation to trying to trailblaze. And it's kind of neat to have
women in your position. I was able, when as a young officer, work for two female supervisors, which they certainly enlightened me and trained me for sure. And I certainly appreciated that. So back to your roots.
Okay. Yeah, my roots. I grew up in Mercer County in Salina, Ohio, on the mighty Grand Lake. That's really where I started doing my outdoorsy activities, such as fishing, waterfowl hunting. And so it was great growing up there with the farming community. I also worked on the dairy farm and hog farm when I was, you know, trying to make ends meet when I was 15, 16 years old. And the people that I had worked for on these farms, they did a lot of waterfowl hunting and they invited me along. I always say, you know, you've got to learn from someone. Someone has to mentor you. You're not born with a shotgun and a fishing rod in your hand. So for those of you that are out there that are mentoring our future sportsmen and women, we appreciate you and we applaud you. I'm glad I had that opportunity. That's where my love of the outdoors came from. After high school, my parents were blue collar. They worked in factories. So as soon as I graduated from high school, my dad handed me an application to a factory in Coldwater, Ohio, where they make tractors. And so I filled out the application and I decided that's not what I wanted to do. Right when I would get home, I'd either go fishing or I'd be hunting somewhere. And even if it was on my own, but I did not like being inside. So
nice.
I worked there for a couple of years and saved up my money and went to Hocking College.
That's kind of an iconic school in Ohio, isn't Hocking? I've heard that numerous times before.
Yeah, it's a two-year school, but it's a lot of hands-on training. Mm. And so that's what I really liked about it because it is hands-on. I'm a visual learner. Yeah. So I appreciate it. And you were out in the field. Your laps were done in the field.
Mm.
Learning birds, learning trees.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good school for natural resources.
Yeah, absolutely. I work at a similar college, too, and it's a lot of that. And that's to keep people's attention, too, is to get them out there and get them busy. And when you mentioned duck hunting, just the ID for waterfowl is...
Oh.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, back then, I probably did not know what I was doing.
It's intimidating. A lot of, waterfowl hunters would always call me up when they started waterfowl hunting and say, you know, I don't want to make any mistakes, you know, and I'd kind of, you know, and thank God for like YouTube now. So that's where I direct people to YouTube for duck identification and things like that. You know, big ducks flying high, that type of thing, little ducks, you know, just little things that the tricks of the trade, so to speak. So when the teal are flying in, it looks like a bunch of buzzing bees coming in, and it helps you before you actually have to see them is how they operate. So it's kind of cool, and I'm sure you probably picked up those very quickly.
I do now. My job depends on it.
For sure. So did you go right to the Division of Wildlife? Did you go right to Natural Resources after college, or? Okay.
So I'm going to back up just a minute because my family, we would travel to that state up north for vacations every year. And my grandpa would put us in this 14-foot John boat with a 5.5-horse Johnson motor on it that typically was in a barrel where he's trying to fix it. And we'd get up at 4 a.m. and he'd take his bluegill fishing. And we would come back with a giant basket of fish. And I couldn't wait to go. I mean, we had those long telescopic poles. You know, so when you got a bluegill on there, it felt like you had a whale. Mm-hmm. So it was exciting. And I think that's a lot of those experiences that are also what we got me into wildlife as well. So, yes. So after I went to Hocking College, and of course, during that time, I was working at the local carry out there to make some money. And then after I graduated, went back to my hometown to another factory for 4 months and then decided this still is not for me because it's hard to get a job in conservation law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So I had enough of the factory. So I went back to Nelsonville, Ohio in the Athens area and I got two jobs. And so that's how one of them was mowing grass for a company and I was the lawn maintenance supervisor. And I just so happened to mow ODNR's property, Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Division of Wildlife's property. So I'm like, okay, while I'm here mowing grass, I walked into the district office and I walked up to Mike Budzik, who's our former chief. And I said, I want to be a wildlife officer. And he looked at me and he laughed a little bit, because anytime you have somebody that comes up to you and says, I want to be a wildlife officer, you do chuckle a little bit, because it's hard to get into.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sought after job.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured out what I needed to do. So I started volunteering at Wolf Creek Wildlife Area. And my first job volunteering, this is for free.
Mm-hmm.
This is back when we had wooden outhouses. And so they put me on a backhoe, and I had to dig a new pit for the outhouse and then replace the outhouse back over top of that pit. So, you know, I'm doing this stuff for free as time allows, and then with my other two jobs.
Wow.
So I did, I've touched a lot of rungs on the ladder, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I started volunteering there one day, half a day a week, then one day a week. Then I got a seasonal position. Then I got a part-time permanent position. And then I applied for a job at Kilbuck Wildlife Area as a technician, a wildlife area technician doing wildlife management activities. So I was there for 2 years. In between time, I've applied for the wildlife officer job twice. So third time's a charm.
And I'm with you.
And 1998, they let me in. I was fortunate enough to get into the Wildlife Officer Academy. And
awesome.
There were 15 of us, and I was the only woman at that time in the academy.
Hmm. And how many in the academy?
There were 15 of us. Okay. They had over 700 applicants at that time.
Wow. 15. One female, 700. Wow. That was that time frame. You know, now I don't know what it is like in Ohio, but our numbers are down as far as applying. It seems like candidates that we're getting are still pretty good, because we have so few jobs to fill in the Northeast, and we're in one of the smallest states. You know, for us, a class of three would be a pretty good size class. So we're getting three good applicants, but when you're talking 15, that's a lot harder. And your classes are probably increased since then, sizes.
Yeah. Right now, we have 13 cadets going through the wildlife portion, where they're learning about the Division of Wildlife. They've already been through Ohio State Highway Patrol Academy. They're commissioned as officers, and now they are downstairs learning about what the Division of Wildlife does and what their positions are going to be, because it's such a diverse position. You have to know law enforcement, fish management, wildlife management, education. You need to know how to talk in front of people. So
mm-hmm.
they have a lot to learn, and it's being in this position right now to go down there and talk to them. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, because I sat there one time, you know, I sat there.
Yeah.
And it flies.
Yeah. And that's great to reflect back on. I'm doing the same thing. I'm going to be the keynote speaker at Pennsylvania's graduation for their game wardens. And
great.
Again, I'm reflecting to being back in that spot where they're sitting and trying to put my thoughts together and my speech together to reflect, you know, what an exciting time in your life. And then, you know, for me, it's learning too. I mean, teaching college and stuff, I'm learning from this generation what they're gravitating to, what they're using. It changes the way I teach, all kinds of things, because they are communicating in much different ways than we did. And to know what they're using, what they're communicating with, and I still haven't figured out Snapchat and probably never will. But I think that's awesome that you go down and have a talk with new recruits, and to have that connection to the chief of law enforcement is pretty special for a new recruit.
It's really nice to be able to have them in the same building during this time. Obviously, they're going to be in the field, but if I'm in the office, I go down every other day or every day and just say hi and help teach some of the courses. We all take part, whether you're from fisheries or wildlife management, law enforcement, all of our staff is a part of this academy, and they're all teaching these cadets. And I was just going to say that we don't, as far as new people coming on, we don't have as many applicants that are hunting or fishing, and that's okay. But it's more important than ever right now for us as leaders to mentor them, so that it doesn't mean they have to hunt and fish, but when they're dealing with our constituents in the field, that they can relate to them. And they're knowledgeable about what is going on in the field.
Mm-hmm.
just as important when we have people in that don't come in and hunt and fish, because we're a very diverse agency. We're not just dealing with deer and turkey. We're dealing with reptiles and plants and ginseng. And so, again, very diverse position, but it's up to us as leaders to teach them and show them the way before we leave.
Yeah. And then this new class, do you have any female officers?
We have one.
We have one. So from the time you came on until now, it's pretty, I mean, you were a class of 15, they're a class of 13, you were one, and this class is one. It's interesting. It really hasn't changed a whole lot, has it?
It hasn't. And I can tell you a little bit of history with women in wildlife conservation law enforcement in Ohio. Is our first female law enforcement officer was Rosetta Zimmerman. And she was an officer back in the 1920s. And she carried like a 38 special, and she smoked cigarettes, and she rode on horseback. And that's how she patrolled. And she had written a book back in the day. And I have that book, which is really cool because I can kind of see the differences of then and now.
Yeah.
And I think it was, they hired two more in the 20s, two more female officers. And then it wasn't until 1956 till they hired their next one.
Huh.
And I believe we've had 15 female officers in the last 150 years.
Wow.
And it's sometimes the applicant pool, you know, because back in the day, we didn't have as many women interested in the hunting, fishing. And now we're getting more and more. I'm seeing more and more in the field. I can just see it from my career and the last 30 years, the amount of diversity that's coming into the field. And not just hunting and fishing, but it's also important to state wildlife watching or just liking the outdoors.
Mm. Yeah, you got to start with a passion for the outdoors, and then that kind of, you know, segues into all of our positions for sure. And you certainly, you know, when you started off, you had the same passion that I did. I could see is doing those menial jobs that did, you know, didn't pay a whole lot, but
anything.
You had to get experience. You had to be on that top tier to get those slots back then. So you did anything that you could to put on your resume so it looked good, you know. But it takes passion. And I just, that's really interesting history that you started in the 1920s. Any thoughts of what happened in that time frame that didn't hire office or female officers? Or
I think it's the time period.
Mm-hmm.
I really do think it's a time period of back then. She was just one of those trailblazers.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know the exact reasoning.
Yeah, and you're probably right. Women's roles changed. I mean, during the World War I, World War II, we certainly leaned on the female population to do a lot of the male jobs because they were at war. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, certainly very interesting. Very interesting. That's really cool, though, the history. So, when you get hired, I know you've got some pretty cool background as far as an officer goes. You were able to do some pretty cool things as you came up through the ranks.
Yeah. So when I came out of the academy, I was at large in what we call in Central Ohio. So I worked all over Central Ohio. And then I was moved to District 3, which is something interesting because that's when the dove issue came up. And, you know, we were trying to get dove hunting in Ohio. So I did a lot of work in Northeast Ohio, going to different organizations and different groups and talking to them about doves hunting. And, you know, we finally did get it in Ohio in around 94, 95. Mm. That also helped me with my public speaking as well, because I had to go to all these different groups and speak. Mm. So that's something interesting that happened then. After I was at large, then I was the Lucas County Wildlife Officer, which is Toledo. And as much as I didn't want to go there, I went there, and is very diverse. I mean, you have the lake, you have the western side of Lucas County, which is woods. And so you had a little bit of everything. And sometimes it was hard to put my blinders on and go home because, you know, if you see someone fishing or hunting or, a lot of fishing going on there, you would check their licenses or whatever. But I was there for a year and a half. And then I applied for the investigator position back in Central Ohio. So I got comfy in an investigator role, and I've been here. I was an investigator for 21 years.
Wow.
And through those 21 years, I got to see a lot. I got to do a lot. Some of the larger investigations that we have ever worked on in Ohio came from that time period. It's very fortunate to have that in my career.
Mm. And you went undercover, didn't you, while you were an investigator?
Yeah. When I first started, this is a kind of a funny story, too.
I like funny stories. So do the listeners.
So green is the grass, right? This is when I was still in Toledo. So green is grass. They're like, hey, we need you. Because we had a couple undercover officers. And it, so they thought it would be good to bring a woman on board.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was told to get in this van and drive to Eastern Ohio and meet this guy in a Walmart parking lot. And I had no idea who I'd meet. So I get there and there's this guy with a beard down to like his belly button, hair long, and he's like, get in. I'm like, oh my God, where are we going? So well, I got in and so we took off and I can't tell you where we were. I'd never been to that part of the state before. I worked with that undercover unit for probably the first 10 years on and off.
Mm-hmm.
And did some stuff with them, learned a lot from them as well. It's not just doing that.
So that guy wasn't one of your undercover people.
He was.
Guys like that are why my wife didn't really want him coming to the house and banging on the door. So, because she met a few like that and she was like, who the heck is coming here?
Right?
That's a good description of half of our clientele.
So one of the funny things about that is I was out in the middle of nowhere in some mobile home, you know, and So I was supposed to be this guy's girlfriend, right? I guess he must have called his wife or something and told him that I was playing the girlfriend. And then she said, oh, no. So then I had to switch immediately to... There was another guy there, so I had to be that girlfriend. So it all changed within a matter of hours. So just because it's girlfriend, it's not like, you know, we're working together.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
And that had to be unique because, you know, there wasn't a lot of women working undercover, I'm sure. So that wife was probably the first time she heard of that.
Yeah. Yeah. When I came out of the academy, I was the only female field officer. So, and they're like, okay, who do we have to choose from? Let's get Candy. That's all they had.
It was a short list.
Okay. I had like barely a year on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
those times were fun. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of hours.
Did you find, you know, that suspects had a tendency to gravitate to you because you were a woman?
No.
No? Okay.
Well, a little bit, but
I'm sure it might be case by case too.
But as far as me, I don't have to know everything, right?
Right. Yeah.
Usually these guys want to brag about stuff and you just act like you don't know anything and then they tell you everything. So, but they're typically, they gravitate towards the guys just to talk to them, you know, talk about hunting or whatever. And if I'm the girlfriend standing there, they don't really pay much attention to me. And that would give me the opportunity to ask questions.
Hmm. Yeah. And like you said, you could ask questions that they could explain. Right. How do you shoot that thing at night, you know?
Show me.
The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear. Which is why Midway USA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
You know, what's the difference between green ginseng and dried ginseng? I just learned that from you guys, actually.
From Kirk.
From Kirk, yes. That was my ginseng education for sure.
Well, he's an expert in it.
Yeah. Oh, it's. I'm fascinated with things that I don't know about. So that's what I love about podcasting. I'm constantly learning the history of Ohio 1920s first female. That's fascinating. That's just cutting edge. And now, you know, my brain goes to, I wonder who the first female conservation law enforcement officer was nationwide.
Michigan.
Do you remember a name off your top of your head?
I don't have the name off the top of my head, but I did a presentation on women officers of wildlife.
You did?
History of women. Well, yes. And another topic, but we have a group in Ohio. Our agency is very progressive.
Uh-huh.
And it's called the WOW Group, Women Officers of Wildlife. Because when we initially started this podcast, you said that it's different for women than it is men in this industry. Mm-hmm. And it definitely is. So I always ask, when have you been the only man in the room?
Right.
Right?
I don't think.
If you would ask me, when have I only been the only woman in the room? Probably all the time. 90% of the time. Or 99% of the time.
Yeah.
So we have a group that it's all of our female officers. We have 9 right now. And we get together once or twice a year. And we discuss equipment, uniforms. Because we were wearing men's uniforms up until the early, mid-90s probably.
Mm-hmm.
So our agency is now accommodating to our female officers. Also, pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So these are things that our group has been working on to benefit not just the female officers, but the Division of Wildlife as a whole.
Mm.
And we're working on a law enforcement awards banquet right now because we don't have one of those. So it's been a great group, and I really appreciate what we've been able to accomplish.
Yeah.
And just to have this group, we're very fortunate.
Yeah, no, I think so. Any ideas, like nationally, is there a group like that too? I know there's a law enforcement one, but not for conservation law.
No, there used to be one through NAWEA.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had looked that up and researched it, but I hadn't seen anything since. So when I'm going to these other meetings across the United States, I'm talking to the other chiefs about our group.
Mm-hmm.
And so interested in starting their own.
Yeah.
But it is a benefit to the agency. Also, it helps with retention.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I'm even thinking like regionally, like, so we only had one female officer up until just recently. So for my whole tenure. So, Heidi was our only officer. She's been on my podcast as well, but you know, that would be a very small group to organize. I think we're up to 3 now, which is, you know, great. But again, just 3 in a group like that is still. So if you did like Northeast, I bet that would be a kind of cool little group. And, you know, I hope that somebody listening to this podcast maybe might start facilitating that. We've talked about Sheila Paquette too. I mean, another woman that came on similar time frame as you and very involved in a lot of different things. And, you know, I can see her taking a lead on something like that. So, hint, hint, Sheila.
Yes. Yes.
No, that's cool. So, investigations and... can you talk about your, you know, so many officers listen to this, and I didn't expect it when I started this, but they're fascinated by other states and how they operate and stuff. But you're the, like you said, the law enforcement executive administrator, which is the chief of law enforcement. Your hierarchy, as far as you don't use the lieutenants, the colonels, you have different supervisors, you have investigators. Can you kind of just explain that?
I'll go from the ground up.
Okay.
We have 145 commissioned staff. Okay, so we have our wildlife officers. We have 1 per county in the state of Ohio. We also have Lake Erie, where we have 2 officers up there, commissioned officers, just for Lake Erie. Then we have our wildlife investigative unit. We used to be separated into districts, and just 2 to 3 years ago, we restructured, and now we're 1 wildlife investigative unit.
Okay.
So we have 13 investigators in the state of Ohio. They're called investigators. Up from that, then we have our we have 5 districts in the state of Ohio. And in each district, there is a law enforcement operations manager. So that would be considered your captain.
Okay.
And then from there, we have law enforcement field supervisors are our lieutenants.
Okay.
There's officers, the lieutenants, the captains, and then further up, then in central office, where I am now in Columbus, we have central office law enforcement staff. So that would be I'd be considered the chief of law enforcement. And then I have 6 other employees. One is in charge of training. One's in charge of equipment. One's in charge of cadets. One's in charge of our Ohio Revised Code, Ohio Administrative Code. One's in charge of the Wildlife Violator Compact, as well as our canine units and permitting, wildlife permitting. And So those would be considered our majors. Mm-hmm. And on Lake Erie also, we have a law enforcement operations manager, and he's in charge of investigators on Lake Erie. So we have, I think we have 6 investigators on Lake Erie.
Mm. And that's to deal with a lot of the commercial fishing type stuff?
Yeah, they do commercial fishing enforcement. They do a lot of that, as well as just routine license checks, over bags. It's Lake Erie is on fire. It's constantly busy up there.
Yeah, no doubt. For sure, when I went up for, we had the International Wildlife Crime Stoppers when Ron Olas was president, we were up there and I learned a lot about it, Lake Erie. I learned a lot about just the commercial fishing of it. I mean, when I saw a perch, I think it was $18 a pound, then I about fell over.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Something that, you know, in the Northeast, I think it's getting better, but they used to leave a perch on the ice because it was a junk fish and not a trout. And, you know, I love eating. They're nice, sweet fish, but at $18 a pound, I about fell over.
Oh, yeah. There's money to be made.
Yeah.
People are making. I was actually at that conference and I did a presentation of an Operation North Coast for Ohio.
Yes, I remember that now. So, and I did, I did a podcast with Ron regarding Operation North Coast.
I listened to that.
Yeah. So that was very cool. I've made a lot of friends in Ohio, so I really appreciate your state and the officers. And my connection, I was at the National Wild Turkey Conference, and that's where I met Kirk last year. And I was at a hotel that was off the area, by not like 5 miles, but 5 miles during that conference is like, you know, probably a 2-hour roundabout commute. So I was bringing my suits that I had to wear and everything and hanging them in your booth. So thank you so much. Those guys were great. And it's been a good connection and a good friend. So did you ever inspire to be the chief? So it was just kind of a path that
was, you know, doing investigations for 21 years. And when we restructured, then they gave me a position as a lead investigator for our investigative unit. I have almost 29, in about a month, I'll have 29 years on. So,
Thank you. There
was, the position was coming up and, you know, I want to be able to make some change, have a seat at the table, make some decisions and help out, you know, the field. And coming from the field, I think I can relate to what's going on, and I've got the pulse of what's going on. I appreciate everything that our officers do, our investigators, all our staff, but they have been wonderful with me in this position. I feel a lot of support, and what I learned is I don't have to know everything because my lesser strengths are their strengths. So I do not feel bad about saying, hey, I don't know. Can you handle this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been great, a great transition. And, you know, obviously when I first came into the position, it was a little nerve wracking. I was a little stressed out. And sometimes I still am.
That's understandable.
It was the right decision.
Yeah.
It was. Initially, I thought, I don't know if I made the right decision, but I made the right decision.
Yeah. That's awesome to hear.
I'm happy about it.
Can you tell us some of the stuff that you're tackling as far as changes?
Yeah, I can. I have a list.
That's great.
I'm going to get my list out. I'm carrying it around the state. I try to go to all the law enforcement meetings across the state because I think it's important to communicate what we're doing here in central office to our staff.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, I feel like it's important for them to be a part of what we're doing. I can't conquer these things on my own. And that's why I need working groups to put together and using their expertise to do programs. Otherwise, it's not going to get done. Let's talk about drones for a minute.
Nice.
Not too long, though.
Okay.
But we are noticing the capabilities of drones.
Mm-hmm.
And we may be a little behind the eight ball. I know a lot of law enforcement agencies are working with drones. And the last search warrant that we did, we borrowed a drone from, or the police department came over, and we were doing a search warrant. The guy was known as somebody that would flee. So they put their drone up and they sent me a link, and I was able to watch our officers enter into the apartment. It was just an overview of the apartment to see if the guy was going to run or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just hovered over there. And I thought, man, that's great. There's so many things that you can utilize a drone for. We have a lot of search and rescue. that goes on in Ohio too, especially with our larger areas. Appalachian Hills is 60,000 acres. Mm. We've had a few people get lost there. So that's something else it could be used for. So we're looking into a drone program for our law enforcement section. And that's something that's going to come out of our aviation department. Aviation working with those interested. I want people to have opportunities to do other than what they are doing. If they want to specialize in drones, then there will be some application process. So we're working on drones. And with that, segue goes into search and rescue. We're going to expand our search and rescue team. We have one. Most of our guys are in the northeastern part of the state, and they're very well trained. They've been through a tier 1, tier 2 with Pennsylvania, and they do a great job. So I went to one of their trainings, and I thought, we could use this around the state. So we're going to team our canine officers with some way trained in search rescue tracking. So that's something that we're doing, and I'm really excited about. Our annual awards banquet, coming up with that, something I can't tackle on my own. So we're doing a working group with that, trying to get all the officers on X hunts on their phone. Seems simple, but so far it hasn't been. Not from OnX's part, but... Yeah, and we're going to be graduating our 13 cadets on March 15th. So that's exciting. All of our counties in Ohio will be filled, and then we'll have a few extra that will be at large across the state. So we have a lot of, there's more, but I mean, those are just some of the things that I've got a war board. I like whiteboards, so I have it in front of my face. I can see it. I put dates on it. It's almost like doing an investigation. Where are we with this?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't forget about it. So I stay on track that way.
Yeah, that's a great way to tackle problems. So
one other thing, outfitters, guides.
Mm-hmm.
So Ohio does not have licensed guide system or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have guides that can operate across Ohio without any licenses.
Mm-hmm.
What we're looking into doing is an accreditation program for outfitters.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, we may be able to say, hey, this outfitter has been recognized by the Division of Wildlife as a legitimate outfitter.
Right.
So those people that are coming in, most of them are non-residents coming into the state of Ohio to hunt, can be secure in their purchase,
yes,
knowing that this is a reputable place.
So important.
So we're going to try to work closely with our guides and come up with an accreditation program, not regulatory, but just an accreditation program. So.
No, I like that, because I always make the call to the local game warden if I'm going to go fishing or hunting in an area. Just, I don't want to go the wrong person, you know, because looking on paper on our website, you can absolutely, but there's always the behind the scene type thing. So to get that accreditation and put your stamp of approval on somebody, mm-hmm, that's huge, A, for the guide and outfitter, and it's huge for the sport coming in, so that now we know that they've gone through an accreditation process. So that's a win-win on every side.
Yeah, yeah. Those are some of the bigger things that we're working on.
Mm.
And we just had, my last case was in regard to a guy that was leasing property in Ohio to out-of-state hunters. I don't know if you heard about this one.
Please share.
We first heard about it from one of our sheriff's departments. And an officer came to me and said, hey, I got this report from the sheriff's department where this outfitter, he's leasing people's land and he doesn't have permission to lease. So what he was doing was he advertised on over 19 different Facebook sites, Deer Hunt Massachusetts, Deer Hunt Ohio, or, mm-hmm, you know, all over the United States. And then he would say, you know, give me your $400 for a deposit, then you can come to Ohio to hunt. He'd send him maps, contracts, everything. And he got a hold of the wrong people in Florida. These two guys from Florida gave him $2,500 as a deposit for their deer hunt. And initially we were thinking of this as like more of a fraud case, but as the Division of Wildlife, we have a responsibility, I think, to look further into it. Mm-hmm. Once we pulled the report, we found all kinds of Facebook posts where they were saying, he did this to me too, he did this to me too. So the guys from Florida, they decide, we're going to go to Ohio and get our other $2,500 back. And so they called the bad guy and said, hey, meet us at this restaurant. We'll give you your other $2,500 for the rest of the deposit. So the guy shows up with his girlfriend. And in the meantime, the two boys from Florida, one of them, I think, was a former law enforcement. They had called the local sheriff's department. Sheriff's department shows up and they arrest the guy and the girl and on fraud and theft charges at that point. So this is when we get the information. So we pull the report and start reading it. And it just snowballed into this giant. By the time I was done, I had to have a team of officers do interviews because it was during COVID. So we couldn't, you know, we weren't contacting anyone, but we had to contact these other states. Did records for PayPal.
Yeah.
And here he was laundering the money through a pawn shop. So these people were actually paying through a pawn shop's account. And then what was good about the PayPal records that it revealed many, many, many. And it revealed the victim's address, name, address, some phone numbers, and then a little note that would say, for Ohio Hunt. And by the time we were done, there were 77 victims, 70 in, I think, 39 states.
Wow.
And then 7 landowners in Ohio. And I hooked up with the feds on this, and we charged him federally for fraud. And he had to pay back like $36,000, and then he went to federal prison for a year. So that's I get good reasoning to get something going here in Ohio for accreditation. And that, you know, that's not the only one, but that's a good example of what's going on out there. And these guys, these victims would not have called because to them it's $400 individually. But if you put it together as a whole and we made it a federal case, that way we could prosecute him with all the money he had made from it.
Yeah, because they were just ignoring the $400. Were people actually showing up and getting on this land and having?
We did have a couple people, yeah.
Yeah. And with the real owners are like, yeah, you don't have permission here. And yeah, I would imagine that got sticky too.
It got sticky. And then he would book them all during a same time period. So then there's a safety hazard there. You know, you can't have 60 people showing up at one property during gun season or whenever. And yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It took about 2 years to get that one through.
Yeah, but I'm sure everybody involved really appreciated that because, yeah, that's sucky. And again, like you said, accreditation, because you don't know. You know, if you have a good-looking website and you have all the bucks your buddy shot on there and stuff and you talk a good talk, you know, here's the deposit. Boom. That's all I need. Yeah. And then we move on to the next deposit and the next deposit. And oh, that's horrible. That's horrible. From a consumer point, you go out and you go to hunt and you're like, oh, I got this sweet deal. And yeah, so did 60 other people open in day. And there's already people in there.
Yeah. And that's 70 people that probably don't want to come back here to hunt. So we have to make sure that they feel good about coming here and safe. Yeah. So.
And kind of Ohio is right now, it's the place to hunt, isn't it?
Yeah. It is the place to hunt. We have some nice deer here.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
And a lot of other things.
Yeah, for sure. But right now, I think Ohio is probably the hottest state to hunt, just looking at the stats. I mean, we started in Illinois. I think we've moved to Ohio, and maybe we'll move to Kentucky next. That seems like it's up and coming. And yeah, so it's kind of neat to watch this stuff, especially from a law enforcement perspective, because the cases that start getting generated out of your states over these trophy animals, for sure. So that's kind of neat, and generates good podcasts, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely. I've listened.
Oh, great. Anything else you want to share? How do you encourage the next generation of female wildlife officers? I mean, like you said, you had kind of that hunting, fishing type background. You know, how are we reaching out? Because it seems like the stats are very similar to when you started.
Recruit, but different ways to recruit, you know, and get our female officers out there, too, because when I look back, and before I worked for the Division of Wildlife, I went to the state fair and I saw a woman in a Division of Wildlife uniform, and that really had an impact on me. I mean, I was like, wow, I wanted to wear that uniform. I really wanted to wear that uniform. And I think that if we can reflect what we want to see in the field, we'll have more constituents that look like us. And I think that if we, as female wildlife officers, get out there, we recruit and show people that, hey, it's a good job. It's good for women in law enforcement, and it's a great career, and we support each other. I think the biggest thing is support. And with this group that we have in Ohio, I don't keep my, I guess, things that I've gone through throughout my career. It hasn't been always, you know, rainbows and cupcakes.
Right.
Okay. So if I can tell them or teach them, I guess, kind of share my experiences, be vulnerable, you know, and let them know that I'm there for them. I think it's helpful, and to support each other. I think we have a really good support system here in Ohio, not with just the female group, but with all of our officers, it's like a big family. And that's one of the things I like about this division most is how we support each other.
Mm-hmm.
And where else can you go work for 30 years and have the same passions that the other people do? And you learn from each other. We can't forget that, you know, you're the mentor now. Someone taught you,
mm-hmm.
and you need to teach them. So that's what I want to take away.
Right. And remember, it's a new generation, and they can teach you as well.
You were as green as they were one day.
Yeah.
Did you forget where you came from? Good thing about with the cadets is it brings you back to your roots. You know, anytime you go down there, you see these fresh, smiling faces that are ready to take to the field, and it just reminds you of why you wanted to be where you are. So.
100%. Certainly glad you are where you are, Candy, and thanks for sharing all that stuff with our podcast, our listeners. I think it's inspirational, especially for this month where we're highlighting women in law enforcement. Still trailblazers, as far as I'm concerned. Still, it looks like our stats are, and it may stay the same for the next 20 years too, but I think if we have passionate, strong women, I think we're gonna do just fine. And I really enjoy this conversation and the conversation I've had with others in your positions, whether it be a sergeant or a chief. I think the game wardens are all cut from the same cloth, or rather, if you're male or female. So
thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Please join me, Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and other game wardens on our adventures, protecting wildlife, saving lives, and having fun, all while serving the public and the natural resources of our planet. Listen to the tales and experiences of those who work in the outdoors while being entertained with stories about encounters with poachers, wildlife investigation, murder investigation, near-death experiences, search and rescue missions, wildlife interactions from game wardens around the country and around the world. When I retired, I realized I couldn't let go of that legacy, but rather wanted to share the passion, the commitment, and the stories of those men and women that call themselves game wardens. This is Game Warden Wayne Saunders, and this is Warden's Watch.
When you go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know, right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome!
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. For even more content, be sure to watch the original films from HuntStand Presents on the Waypoint TV channel every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit waypointtv.com to learn more.